Okay, then I would start. So thank you for your attendance. My name is Tobias Tiefke. I'm studying computer science at Schmalkalden University at Applied Sciences, and I'm about to finish my bachelor by this semester, and then I will start with my master's. And Professor Ralf Staudemeyer can't be here today. He is a professor at Schmalkalden University of Applied Sciences for IT security, especially IT security on constrained devices like microcontrollers. And at our university, we have a course on mobile security. And for this course, we have some microcontrollers the students should program. And these microcontrollers are located in a laboratory. And during the corona pandemic, there was no access possible to the laboratory for students. So in order to make it possible that students can actually take part in this course, we had to find a solution on how students can work with these microcontrollers remotely. And in order to make this possible, we decided to create a virtual laboratory which resembles the physical laboratory we have at our university. And but everything should be available online and also all the time for students without any restrictions. And for that, we decided on building a virtual laboratory for the university, which is called the SUASECLAB Virtual Laboratory, and I would also like to present that laboratory to you now. So just as a quick outline, first I will talk about the main problems we faced and what led to the development of the laboratory. Then I will talk shortly about Work Adventure, which we are using as underlying platform for our laboratory. So we basically take Work Adventure and extend it. And in section two, I will talk about Work Adventure itself. And then in section three, I will talk about what we did in order to build our own laboratory. However, we had two major issues and when we implemented that laboratory. First of all, we actually had to use a part of Work Adventure which is proprietary, and of course we don't want any proprietary bits in our laboratory. Therefore, we decided on re-implementing the administration service, and in section four I will talk about how we did that, and in section five I will talk about some security issues we found in Work Adventure when building our laboratory, and there I will talk about how we found these issues and also about how these issues can be mitigated. And in the end, I will talk a bit about the transferability of our work, so that, for example, if you're interested in building your own laboratory, that you have some starting points. And we also publish all our source code so that you can just take it from GitHub and build your own laboratory on top of ours or use our code or parts of them. So first of all, the main problem we had are that these IoT devices, we have Solertia remotes, which are microcontrollers running the Contiki operating system. They were developed as part of a research project on confidentiality and integrity in constrained environments. And but basically, that's not the point. Basically, you could use any microcontroller for our laboratory, so you could also think about using Arduinos or similar platforms. And as already said, our university has a course in which these programs, these remotes should be programmed in C. And as we weren't able to hand out these devices to students, we had to find a solution on how students can work with them from home during the time of the corona pandemic. So therefore, we decided on building a virtual platform. However, we also wanted a couple of other features. So for example, BigBlueButton is a pretty known platform for online lectures. However, Big Blue Button also has some limitations. So for those people who don't know, Big Blue Button, it's basically some online conferencing software which was especially designed for lectures. So for example, the presenter can upload some slides in PDF format, and then the participants can download these slides, or the slides are being shown in the browser, and that saves a lot of network traffic because the slides only have to be downloaded once and you don't have to share your screen all the time. However, what we found as limitation in Big Blue Button was that even though it resembles a lot like a lecture, it basically isn't a lecture, because in a lecture you also talk to your seat neighbors and maybe make some jokes or talk about the topic of the lecture, and that's not possible in Big Blue Button. So we wanted to have some kind of option where you are able to talk with your seat neighbors and also without the professor or instructor noticing it. And the third problem we also had is privacy. So for those who had to deal with conferencing systems during the corona pandemic, know that there are many, many tools you could use. But when it comes to open source software or software which is privacy friendly, then you'll soon notice that many of the conferencing systems which are available are basically harvesting user data or maybe even selling it. So we wanted to have a privacy-oriented system, and we only wanted to store as little information as necessary to operate the service. So when designing this presentation, I was pretty unsure what I should put on the slide, and what you can actually see here is not the problem, but our solution to it. So basically, when setting up a user for a system in which he should be able to work, then the problem we would have is that we have a lot of student, and generating accounts for every student wouldn't really make sense, because each account would have the same rights, and therefore we decided on creating one account for each user group. So basically all students which are working in the laboratory log in using the same account. So basically what you need to store in the database are these couple of keys which are being displayed here. So the underscore ID basically comes from the NoSQL database we're using. The identifier in Work Adventure is a UUID, which we have to store, of course, and it's also used for generating the invitation link. The name key is a bit confusing, because what's actually being stored there is something like a description of the account, so that's not the name which you will have in Work Adventure itself. When you log in, you will have the option to select your own name, regardless of what is stored in the database. So for example, for the student account, the name just is being set to student, so that we know that that is a student account. The email is also only used as identifier, so we just use UUID at the domain where our laboratory runs. And some other things like the visit card URL or messages you could send to users are basically just things we don't use. And the text, that's basically just an array of strings which is being used to determine access rights to the maps of our world. So now let me shortly introduce you to Work Adventure, which we use as underlying platform for our laboratory. So for those who maybe took part in the last meetings of the CCC, maybe no Work Adventure because it was used there. But for those who didn't take part there, I'll shortly introduce you into Work Adventure now. So basically, Work Adventure is a conferencing system in the style of a 2D game. So basically, each user has an avatar which you can move over the map. And whenever you move around that map, which really resembles a real world, you can use several features in there. So the main feature, of course, is communicating. And basically, Work Adventure features a group communication, which works just in the same way as in real life. So another multiple people moves their characters close to each other, then a communication channel is being established between them and they can talk directly to each other. And when you decide to leave the group, then you also won't participate in that talk anymore. And what really is important to mention here is that the communication usually happens decentrally. So when multiple users stand nearby, decentral communication channels are being established between them so that the server on which Work Adventure is running doesn't get any information about the meeting. So sometimes it may fail that a decentral meeting can be set up, then the server has to interact with that. But usually the meetings are decentral, so after the meeting ended, no one can actually say that a meeting took place. And another really important feature are so-called actions. So if I go one slide back, you can see that there are multiple actions, multiple areas in the map. And on areas, you can put actions. So actions are basically things which happen after you confirm them. So here it says press space or touch here to enter the Jitsi meeting room. I know it's not really readable, but what actually would happen here is that once you click on that message or hit the space button, then then you would take part in the Jitsi meeting, which was defined as part of this map area. And once multiple users are on the same area and open the Jitsi room, they can also have a bigger conference. And what really is important to mention here is that opening Jitsi rooms is just one action. So it's also possible to use other actions like embedding websites and iframes. And basically, that's what we're mainly using for our laboratory. So basically, Work Adventure has a scripting API and also some kinds of event handling. So in Work Adventure, when you go to a part of a map or an area, this can be detected. And using the scripting API, you can subscribe to events which are being generated when you, for example, walk on a specific area. And then you can respond to that event. So for example, here we have a group workplace. And whenever someone comes close to these tables, then it's being shown what which microcontroller is available on the table and also which sensors are connected. And here it would also be possible to hit space and then you can work directly with that microcontroller. And how this exactly works, I will present it in the next section, but so far I just would like to ask you if everything is clear now or are there any questions so far? Okay, fine. So then I will just talk a little bit about what we did in order to build our own laboratory. So of course, I already talked about a big Blue Button, and we decided to integrate Big Blue Button into our Work Adventure system. Here I have to say that in the latest version of Work Adventure, Big Blue Button is also integrated, but when we started development about a year ago, Big Blue Button wasn't available in Work Adventure, and also the current implementation does not really feature what we would like to have, because in Work Adventure, when you use their default implementation of Big Blue Button, you can join the room, but then you are being disconnected from any group communications. So basically, the whole area where Big Blue Button is defined is not available for group meetings. And of course, that is not what we wanted to have. So basically, for setting up Big Blue Button, we defined the lecture room as an area. And then we listen using the scripting API. We listen whenever the user is walking onto that area. And then we just show a message to the user if he wants to join the lecture. And if the user confirms, then we send a request to an extent to a service we implemented, which basically checks whether the user is allowed to use the service. And if that's true, then we generate the link to the big blue button room and send it back to the user. And then the user's client can open an iframe containing big blue button. And while the user then joins the conference, he is still able to communicate with other users in the lecture room. So basically what we have here is some kind of a lecture which really resembles a real world one, because you can talk with your street neighbors. When it comes to working on virtual machines, the task to realize that was a bit harder, because we had a server on which we created virtual machines. However, the question is how to access a virtual machine from the web. And that turned out to be not as straightforward as we first thought. But we found a solution to it, and that basically works the following way. I don't know if you are all familiar with the VNC protocol, but for those who don't know it, VNC is basically a protocol which makes it possible to remotely control a computer. And what we had on our server was a hypervisor. We use Quick Emulator with KVM, and luckily that hypervisor already features a VNC server for all the virtual machines, which can be enabled easily. And then what you basically get is a TCP port on which you can connect with the VNC client. And usually these VNC clients are native applications, but as Work Adventure is a web application, we also wanted to be the client a web application. So we looked for VNC web clients, and there is one. It's called NoVNC. It's basically a VNC client written in JavaScript. So in theory, using NoVNC, we could connect to that virtual machine. However, the problem still is that using JavaScript, you cannot connect to the TCP socket which is opened by Quick Emulator. So you need some kind of translation which makes it possible for the JavaScript client to communicate with that port. And for that, there is a program called WebSockify, which basically translates a TCP socket to a WebSocket. And luckily, JavaScript can access WebSockets. So NoVNC basically also features a second program called WebSockify. And WebSockify does all the translation between WebSockets and TCP sockets. And then you can actually pretty easy access the virtual machine. However, the problem we quickly faced is that the original implementation of WebSockify doesn't really scale well. So first of all, WebSockify, the main implementation, is written in Python. And secondly, it only can translate one port of one TCP port to a WebSocket. So if we have a virtual PC pool with 30 virtual machines, we would have to have 30 instances of WebSockify running, which we didn't want. But luckily, there are some ports of WebSockify to faster languages, and we found a port which WebSockify was ported to Go. That port contained some bugs, but we were able to fix them really quickly. And we also made a small addition on that, so that basically WebSockify can read all the TCP ports and WebSocket translations from a configuration file, and then basically it opens channels for each port that should be translated, and using that we were able to have a really quick translation between TCP and WebSockets, and turned out that using that way accessing the virtual machine basically feels like if you would work with the computer directly. However, so far we only had a virtual machine in which you can run programs. So here, what you can see is the Contiki simulator, which Coja simulator, which simulates microcontrollers running the Contiki system. So basically, you can do some pretty basic steps in programming microcontrollers, but when it comes to larger projects, of course, it is necessary to work on real hardware. And here we made the decision to set up computers in our laboratory and connect the remotes to them. And the remotes are basically just another name of the microcontrollers we have. So the Solertia remotes are being connected to the hypervisor of the virtual machines and then being passed directly using USB pass-through to the virtual machine. And we also did the same with a webcam, which films the microcontroller all the time, so that, for example, when you do some exercises like blinking LEDs or something like that, you can directly see that from home. What was still missing was the feature to communicate in groups. Actually, you could use the group communication feature of WorkAdventure, but the problem is that the radius for the group communication is not so big that you could use it for communicating at these desks. And furthermore, if someone would just walk near the table and someone is sitting there, they would be both put in a group, and probably not everyone walking by wants to join the group. So we decided to declare the zones near the tables as silent zones where the group communication is disabled, and instead put all users working on a remote into a separate Jitsi room. And basically what happens is that we have developed a really small software called Multi-User Virtual Machine Assigner, which ensures that all people who are working on a virtual machine are also in a Jitsi room and can talk with each other. And here you can also see the same effect on the on a real remote. In the slide before here, you can see another room, which is a general purpose PC pool we also developed. And using that PC pool, you can learn a lot of programming languages. We set up many program languages in that virtual machine for the general purpose PC pool. So for example, you can learn Java programming or also web programming using PHP, but there are also tutorials on operating systems and so on. So here a lot of lecturers from our faculty gave us some material we could put into the virtual machines, and then the students can work with the materials on their own. So yeah, here you can also see the same with the remote, and here I also have a small video which I would like to show to you. So basically, I'll show in this video how you work with the remote. So first, you walk to the place, and then you, well, that was maybe a little bit quick, but first you walk to the place, and then a pop-up is being shown in which you can see what remote or what microcontrollers are available, and also which sensors are connected to them. And then, of course, also NoVNC opens, and then you can just put NoVNC in full screen, and there you can directly work with the remote. So first of all, we're letting show the remote in the console, and then we enter some make commands in order to compile a really small program, which basically lets some LED blink, and now we upload the program to the remote, and now you should soon see a blinking LED in the top right corner of the remote. Yeah, so now it blinks. And basically what you can see here is that you're directly able to interact with the remote, and you can program it in real time. And basically there are some other commands available, like accessing the shell of the remote and so on. So basically just all features which are available using the toolchain. And as already said in the introduction, it's basically possible to connect any USB device to the virtual machine. So if you have other controllers or hardware you would like to program, you could also use the solution and just pass the USB device to the virtual machine. Here I also brought you a little photo which shows how the remotes were basically placed in our laboratory. So we have a table, and on the table basically six remotes are placed for the six group workplaces we have. And basically for each remote there's also a webcam that captures the video stream of the remotes. As you maybe saw earlier in the screenshot of the laboratory, we have more than six places, but we decided to make six places on which groups can work on remotes, and on the other places single user can work with the emulator. So the students who just want to get a little bit in touch with how everything works, they can for example use the emulator, and the students who work on bigger projects, they can use the physical remotes. So just to show you how everything works together, I have created that figure which basically shows the main parts of our laboratory. So of course there is WorkAdventure, which has a front end, which is basically the client you run in your browser, and then the back end, which are services we offer on our server. And WorkAdventure on its own also already embeds Jitsi, which you can use, and since a couple of months, I think also BigBlueButton, but here we decided to use our own implementation. So basically we have two options on how to integrate BigBlueButton. And in order to make it possible to work with the remotes, we also integrated NoVNC into the WorkAdventure front end. And in order to being able to communicate with the virtual machine itself, we use the VNC server of this virtual machine provided by the hypervisor, and translates the TCP socket to a WebSocket using WebSockify. And for multi-user workplaces, we have developed a multi-user virtual machine assigner which embeds NoVNC and Jitsi Meet, and that way it's ensured that the people who work on a multi-user workplace can also communicate with each other. For being able to create BigBlueButton rooms, we also have to call the BigBlueButton API from the WorkAdventure backend. But basically that are only some API calls. I think in our implementation, the whole creation of the BigBlueButton room is maybe about 50 lines of code. So it's actually pretty straightforward, and the BigBlueButton API is also documented very well. But still we had one large problem, and that is that some features WorkAdventure offers are only available in the paid version. So there's an open source version which contains the most important parts of WorkAdventure, but there's also a paid version which you can use for features like access restriction to the map, because if you don't use any access restriction, basically everyone who has a browser can visit the laboratory and do stuff there, and we didn't want that. But we also didn't want to pay for a proprietary software. And of course, in order to preserve the user's privacy, we also wanted to have all the data in our data center. So we definitely didn't want to integrate the administration service from WorkAdventure itself. So we decided to re-implement it. And on that I would like to talk now, but so far I would also like to ask you if there are any questions so far. Yes? Or I think you need a microphone. Oh yes, that's also. Okay. Yeah. So the question was, how do we deal with microcontroller failures? For example, if the microcontroller stops working or has to be reset. So that's a really good question, and that was a problem we faced. And for the, some problems, we don't have kind of a real solution, but. Usually, resetting them is, in our case, likely possible using a command we can issue over USB, so we can do it from the virtual machine. And if the microcontroller becomes stuck, it may not be available via USB, but we found out that it luckily resets when rebooting the hypervisor. So what we actually have is that we have one desktop computer for each remote, and if a remote fails, then we just reboot the hypervisor, and then after the reboot, the remote is available again. So it's maybe not a perfect solution, but one which works and also works without anyone having to go to our physical laboratory and reset it manually. Okay, so I hope this answers your question. The micro controller itself, when being connected to the hypervisor, basically we have installed the program which or the toolchain which you use for programming on the hypervisor too, and there we have for our microcontrollers there is a toolchain which makes it possible to communicate directly with the controller. So in case anything fails there, we can always issue commands via USB, and if that fails, then we can just reboot the hypervisor. So I hope this answers your question. Okay, so for the details, we can also talk about that after the presentation. Okay, so I don't know if there are any other questions. Otherwise, I would continue with the re-implementation of the proprietary admin services. So basically, when showing you the architecture of the laboratory, I was a bit simplifying on how WorkAdventure works. So WorkAdventure has the front end, of course, which is the client running in your browser, but the back end actually isn't one service, but there are many services which interact with each other. So when connecting to WorkAdventure, you basically connect to the pusher service. And the pusher service can either answer a request on its own or forward the request to another service, which can be the back service, which is part of the backend, but actually the pusher also acts like a backend. So it's not very clear to make to say what actually is the big difference. The documentation says that the pusher handles all incoming connection and forwards them, but when you take a closer look at the code, then what I have to say is that it rather looks like the code evolved by the time, and you can't really make a very clear distinction, but maybe there are also people having other opinions on that. So someone wants to share that, I'm also very happy. But the main distinction basically we have to make is that the pusher and back service can work with or without the administration service. So if you don't use the proprietary administration service or our re-implementation, then the pusher and back can notice that and give you an error when a function which actually would require a working admin service, then you would just get an error. I can show it to you in one slide. So how did we actually found out how the communication to the admin service works? So as pusher and back have to talk to the admin, you also can find the structure of the API endpoints in the code, because of course pusher and back have to know where the admin service resides and also how to interact with it. So the API endpoint structure was already defined in the code more or less since a couple of weeks. It's also documented using Open API. So building your own administration service is a little bit more easier now. It wasn't documented when we started our development, but you could actually see pretty fast that the communication with the admin service only happens using HTTP requests, which are being sent to the administration service, and then the administration service responds with a JSON encoded object. So here I also brought a small code snippet from the get URL rooms from same world function. So basically that function is being used when an administrator tries to broadcast a global message to all users over all maps of the world. And what you can see here is that if no admin API URL is defined, which actually just means that no admin service is available, then you get back an error. And in case you have an admin API, then a request is being sent to it using Axios. And if you get a result, then the data of the request is being returned to the client. Well, in this case, the client is the backend, but the backend then acts basically as the backend then works a bit different. How to say it's the easiest way. The backend, when receiving the answer from the administration service, evaluates it and then handles according to the result. Or it deals with the error it got because no admin API is present. And there we, in the files I mentioned, you can find all the other admin API endpoints. So when you're defining our admin services, we just provide these API routes, and our administration service then has to interpret the data which was sent by the backend and can then act according to it. So in that case, the get all maps function basically hands over a parameter from the current room's URL, but actually even if this parameter is handed over, I didn't really figured out how that data is used. From what I assume is that basically this parameter is not even used. At least our administration services works without that parameter for over half a year now. So what we do is fetching all maps from the database and generating all links of the world using a for each loop, and then we just return a JSON encoded array of all rooms we have, and basically then the function in the backend just returns this data back to the back or pusher service, whichever calls the API. So our administration service basically works that way, that we set up a PHP script for each request. So each request has a corresponding PHP script, which is being called when the back or pusher component calls the corresponding API endpoint. In order to re-implement our administration service, we had to look up how the fetch data is being used, because no documentation was available. But even though it worked very well to figure out how everything works, and now there's even documentation available, so if you would like to build an administration service now, you could use the Open API definition and, for example, use Swagger for generating the API endpoints. Even though we don't want to store any user information, we at least have to store the information about the account. And there we use a NoSQL database. But of course, we only store just a little bit of information. So we don't have to store any information which could be used to figure out which person is used to server. As a service, and WorkAdventure also only stores IP addresses and so on temporarily. So as soon as the user leaves the laboratory, basically the information about him is gone. We still had the problem that if you have a database and you want to get data from it, that's one thing. But the question also is, how do you put data into the database? And of course, you could use it using the command line, but this would be a pretty tedious task if you have a larger number of users or user groups. So we decided to build a small web interface for that, so that it is easily possible to input and modify data. And that was also the reason why we use PHP for answering the HTTP requests sent from backend pusher, because in PHP we were able to define all the database functions we need, and then we can reuse database functions we use for our web interface. We can reuse it for the scripts answering the HTTP requests, so that we just save some kind of work here. And yeah, that's just a little screenshot of our administration web interface. So basically, in the administration panel, you can change the settings of all the rooms or maps we have, and you can also do some kind of user management, like for example, which user is allowed to access which maps, and concerning textures. You can also add textures using the administration service. So if you have like an own avatar which you would like to use, you can just add it using the administration panel and then use it in WorkAdventure. So yeah, that was the last slide on how we re-implemented the administration panel. So if there are any questions left, you can ask them now or later. So I don't know if there are any questions regarding that. This doesn't seem to be the case, then I will shortly talk about the security-related issues we found. So basically, since many services of WorkAdventure communicate using HTTP requests, we just tested a little bit out what happens, for example, if you send crafted HTTP requests to services, and for that we used an HTTP client. My choice was curl, but of course you could also use other clients. And so basically an attack vector we found was that using crafted requests, you can basically interact with many access points, because there is little access protection. And we also found out that the default administration token, which is being present in the community version, can be misused for acquiring debug information, which maybe should be available for admins, but definitely not for everyone. So yeah, we drafted some HTTP requests, and with them we were able, for example, to show a warning that the room is almost full. And we also received different kinds of debug messages, and we even found one denial of service error, which happened during processing a Craft API request. Yeah, the solutions to them are, of course, do not use any default values, and even if you set up WorkAdventure or a software on that own, don't use the default value, which is present in the source code. If you find something like that, you should change it, but better change the code so that no something like default or admin passwords are hard-coded in code, because sooner or later someone is going to figure that out and misusing it. Yeah, so concerning access restrictions, of course, it has to be checked if a user is allowed to use the API route. So a little bit of authentication there is a good solution, and also validate the input of the user. So we had, for the denial of service error, we had a problem that it was detected that the user is not an admin, and even the input was validated there, but the error which was then thrown wasn't handled correctly, and this error basically caused the failure of the application itself. So it should also be mentioned that errors should be handled properly, and in some other API requests, we also found that input validation is missing, and with some specific input, you can also cause some errors. So just let me show the code of the how to receive the debug information. All the issues I presented basically use some crafted HTTP requests, so I won't show every request on separate slides because they all work very similar. But you were able to receive debug information in WorkAdventure by calling the dump route on Pusher and then handing over the default token, default administration token, and in every community instance, then WorkAdventure replied with debug information about the users. I cut it out there, but you can see in the content length that a lot of information was sent back to the client sending the request, and in that content which was sent back, you could, for example, find as all the IP addresses of the connected users. Of course, we reported that bug, and it's also been fixed for quite a while now. But yeah, there were many HTTP routes which you could pretty easily abuse, and I also I'm unsure whether all routes are secured now. I hope so, but when I found it, it was some kind of month ago, and I hope that they introduced the verification of users everywhere and not only at the points which I found out and reported, because a fellow student of mine did the same analysis a couple of weeks later, and he found some routes which were not secured, but were secured when I did this. So I hope that current versions are well hardened, but I also saw that there were some commits concerning that, so I hope that everything is fixed and they have learned from that issue. Here in the screenshot, you can basically see this full room warning, which I mentioned earlier. So basically, when number of users has been connected to Work Adventure and the server has the feeling that maybe the CPU is running or is running on its limits, then you can say that no more people should be allowed to enter the laboratory, and then you can show this rooming this warning. But the problem here is that when I tested this route, everyone was able to show that warning by just calling the route. And basically this shouldn't work for everyone. And of course, we also reported that issue, and it has also been fixed now. So I don't know if there are any questions regarding this analysis. If not, I would continue with the transferability, and of course, you also have the options to as an option to ask questions in the end of the presentation. So basically, our solution inherits all features from Work Adventure, so it's fully cooperable. People with Work Adventure, and what we did is extending these features by using the scripting API. So basically, all features we added now happen in separate services. So we can develop them independently from Work Adventure. So whenever a new version is being released, we can pretty easily upgrade because we don't have to do any changes in Work Adventure, so we more or less go with the vanilla Work Adventure from upstream and just put everything we added into scripts which are being loaded along the map. This functionality, of course, we added the functionality to work on virtual machines and group, and also we added Big Blue Button, and in the end we also re-implemented the proprietary admin service. But still, there are, as you can basically include any web application, you can add a lot of extensions to Work Adventure if you want. So just feel free to add your own extensions, and if you're interested in how that is being done, you can have a look at our GitHub repository. So just go to github.com/seclab, and you can find out about all the services we added. And I can also tell you now that the services we added, I only talked about some of them, so you can find out about more services on GitHub. And we also wrote a small article about the laboratory, which you can find under the following link. And in case you have any questions, you can just contact me or Professor Staudemeyer via email. And so that's basically the presentation. And I would also like to thank my fellow students who helped me with this talk, for example, for taking the pictures I showed to you earlier. And there were also some fellow students who developed some other features for our laboratory. So for example, there's a relaxation area in which you can play games like Pac-Man, and some students also developed own games, which we include. So I would also thank them for their contributions. And if you have any questions now, please let me know, and I will try to answer them. Yeah? Okay, so for the maps, there's basically a map editor. So Work Adventure uses a tiled map editor, which is used by a couple of 2D games. And creating a map by saying there's a table, there's some lobby, and so on, that basically goes pretty quick, because it's basically what you see is what you get editor. It becomes a little bit more difficult when adding own services, then you have to write a script. And basically what we do is that the JavaScript we add subscribes to events happening on the map, and when you, for example, detect that the user enters a specific area, then we respond to that. And usually what we do is that we include a website which contains the requested service, and for that we have usually to create a link, for example, to handle over JORT tokens, which we use for authentication. And what we basically do is that create an XHR request to the service, or basically it's more or less a middleware which does all the authentication. And if that if the user can be authenticated, then a link is being sent back to WorkAdventure, which is then being included as iframe. Okay. So are there any more questions? Yes? Okay, so Schmalkalden University is of Applied Sciences is a pretty small university, so usually we have a maximum of about 50 users, and for us the system works really fast, but of course if you have larger numbers of users, then the system will eventually become slower. Yeah, so if there are no more questions, then I would like to thank you for your attendance and interest in the talk. And if you have any more questions which you would like to ask me, just ask me now or someone after the presentation. I'm here for still a couple of hours, so just ask me and I will give my best to answer your questions. Thank you.